This will be news and Bible study. Sabbath Eve, evening, the 8th of November, I flew up to Seattle and I met with Jeff Nykum and his wife. They came from Eastern Washington and had a very nice visit with them. And then on Sunday, we got together again, and then on Monday, I drove up to, no, actually Sunday afternoon, I drove up to Bellingham, Washington, which is about 2 hours north of Seattle, and I was born in Seattle 74 and a half years ago. It doesn't seem like it. Boy. So anyway, got up there and found the hotel, and I was only two exits from where I was going to arrive. Where I was going to arrive was at Logos.com. How many have heard of Logos.com? What you might do is go online and check them out. They are the world's, how shall I put it, largest collector for online Bibles, commentaries, and studies of any website in the world. And they have 600,000 members. And it's a non-profit group. And I met with Phil Spinelli, and John Vogley was the one who arranged the contact for me. And he arranged a contact to see if they might be interested in putting the Bible in its original order on their downloadable programs and their site. Now, I might explain that he told me in about a year they will not be selling the programs on CDs or anything like that. You can download on the website. You buy into a membership, and then you download from the website whatever you need, and you pay a monthly We'll pay a monthly fee for that, which will be worth it because they have a tremendous amount of things on there. And Phil was very receptive and very friendly. And so in talking with him, I said, okay, let me try this one on. And I said, said something to the effect, these aren't the exact words, but something to the effect, that our experience has been when we deal with Protestants that they are very prejudiced toward Sabbath and holy day keeping, and they automatically exclude anything that is put out by Sabbath keepers. So I let them know we're Sabbath and holy day keeping. And he let me know that they even have things on there from Seventh-day Adventists. So I said, oh, we're doing pretty good with this. So I went through the Bible, told them about the layout of it, and told them everything about it. And the way they do it is this. They let their members know that they're contemplating putting a book on or putting a Bible on, and then the members let them know, yes, they want this. And when they... And he showed me several different books they were already considering. And he has a little graph on there. When it gets to 100% that it fills up for the cost of putting it into the format that they have on their website, when it fills up the cost of that 100%, then they go ahead and do it. So hope and pray that it fills up the cost and that they will put it online. But I also took a harmony of the Gospels, and he was very, very interested in that because they don't have a harmony of the Gospels that covers it the way that we have it here. And he was very, how shall I say, I think he is a closet Sabbath keeper. I'll tell you why a little bit later. But as we were talking, I said, you know, one of the first questions that always comes up is, how can you get 3 days and three nights from Friday to Sunday morning? He says, yeah, that always comes up. And I says, well, we've got everything here which shows the sequence and everything tied in with it and when it occurred and so forth. So perhaps the harmony will go online first. But I ask them, please keep all the pages the way that they appear in harmony with the side by side. Because what they do in some cases, they stack them this way, and you kind of lose the effectiveness of as to where it's side by side. So we'll see what happens with that. Then he said, well, let's go to lunch. So we walked a couple blocks over to a Mexican restaurant, and we continued our conversation. And he said, last Friday night, we have a Bible study every Friday night, and that's how I picked up on maybe he's a closet Sabbath keeper. He said, had a Bible study with his sons, and by the way, he's a homeschooler too. And a couple of his friends, and the first question that was asked, why did God kill all of these supposedly innocent people, even women and children? And I told him, well, the answer's in this book, On the Last Great Day. And by the way, I told him a little bit about it. Last Great Day, that if God did not give them an opportunity for salvation in their first physical life, he's going to give them a second physical life, which is not a second chance, but a second physical life for a first chance. And I said, and you know, the Bible doesn't anywhere teach about the immortality of the soul, and he agreed with that. So we hit it off really very, very well. Spent about 3.5 hours with him. And he asked me to send all the other books that we have, so I did. And I promised to send him a couple of other books. One was Jesus and the Forgotten City, which, by the way, we will be able to have that copyright given to us. We won't have to pay anything for it. And then we will contact the author, if he's still alive, and see if he wants to update it, see what we could do to improve Jesus and the Forgotten City, since they've had another 20 years of archaeological work over there in the ancient city of Sepphoris, which was only 4 miles from Nazareth, and was being built by Herod Antipas while Jesus was growing up. And so the author puts in there, is this where Jesus and Joseph worked? Obviously, they wouldn't work on building a temple to Zeus or anything over there, but it'll blow your mind. How many have the book, Jesus in the Forgotten City? All right, I'll have you sign up. We'll send it to you. It'll blow your mind. They had 4-story apartment buildings. And they paved the streets in the city square with the rough cut square stones. I mean, so when you see on History Channel, and I have a beef with the History Channel, every time they do something on the Bible, they make the people in the New Testament look like they've just evolved out of gunny sacks, you know. And but when you see how sophisticated that was, and you see the buildings that they had, it'll really blow your mind as to really how advanced they were. So I sent him Jesus and the Forgotten City. I also sent him the Code of Jewish Law, because I told him you can't understand Paul's epistles on the difficult scriptures without understanding traditional Judaism. So, sent it all up to him. Haven't heard back from him. I'll see if I can call him this next coming week. Okay. Now, many of you met Leon at the feast. Okay? Leon Ritchie and his wife Carol. Well, he called me and said, Fred, why don't you advertise the Bible in the Washington Times? And I said, I don't know. Why should I? So I said, well, I don't know if we should or whether we can afford it or not. And he said, well, I know the advertising manager at the Washington Times because I advertise in selling the coins in the Washington Times. So Leon worked out a deal, came back, and for a full-page ad, $1,000. And we got it for 3 weeks in a row. Okay. Now here is an 8.5 by 11 copy of the ad that was put in the paper. And it turned out that we got the centerfold page with the whole ad. And it came out on Tuesday and we have over a dozen orders already. Even one of them mailed from Tennessee. Clip out the coupon and mail it. So there you go. So appreciate your prayers on that. And if we get whatever we get over the cost of it, then we will put that in the second edition or the second printing of the Bible Fund. So turned out really good. No, it cost $3,000 for the three weekly editions. One a week. Yeah. They have 100,000 altogether, 79,000 that they mail directly to homes, and 21,000 that they put out on newsstands. And he says the newsstand sales go according to however the news is going, and with all the news of the transition and everything and the economy, I'm sure it's going pretty good. And we have on here a picture of the new president. It's not a picture of Obama. I said that in jest, but in reality, with a little cynical as well, from the point of view that Rambo Emanuel is his controller. Chief of staff, he will give Obama his script every day until he learns what he needs to learn. Now, let me read you something just to show you an example. The more things change, the more they remain the same. So here's a preface to the 1974-75 Harmony of the Gospels. We've entered the age of the exposé, and the tentacles of evil and corruption have left few untouched. Immorality and dishonesty have been exposed even among the once trusted political, economic, educational, and religious institutions of this world. In some nations, the exposé of scandalous conduct on high levels has shaken the confidence in governments. The result has been a public demand for a return to morality, ethics, and honesty. On an individual level, the result is that more and more people are seeking a deeper meaning to their personal lives, and they will because of all the things coming upon them now. In their search for greater understanding, many have come to realize that there is a missing dimension in their lives. That missing dimension is a basic spiritual need that cries out to be filled. 1974. The more that things change, the more they remain the same. And so, tell you what, as I wrote in my letter, you cannot solve spiritual problems with political solutions. It won't work. And so we hope that with these different things we can reach out, and I do need to. And also I have been reading the New Testament. I have completed everything but Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. I already read it once, but I wasn't satisfied with it. And by the time I got to the book of Acts, I began to understand how to do it, but there were still so many errors in it that I've had to make two corrections on some of the verses because I don't know how to read. And you'll be surprised when you read along. Try reading out loud and see how accurate you are in your reading, and I think you'll understand the problem. And here I've been doing this for how many years now? 44? Okay. Now let's look at a few other news things here. There is great silence that has taken place with the G20 debt solution. But what may happen is the countries who are holding all the debt, and we're creating more and more and more and more, and the $700 billion that the Treasury wanted, I think, was just a cover for the Fed to loan out the trillions that they actually have that they never report to the public. Because, see, the Federal Reserve is a private bank run by international bankers claiming to be the Federal Reserve Bank of the United States, and therein is the problem. And so since we have all this fiat money out there and no currency is strong enough to take over being the world trading currency, they're going to have to come to some solution with the 20 nations. And so what they did at the meeting, I heard just the other day, they have a whole plan of rules and regulations for all the banks in the world to operate in a coordinated way, with coordinated equal regulations and requirements. And so I think this is setting up, as I said in the sermon, it's going to set up the apparatus which will eventually lead to the mark of the beast. Because you have to have a worldwide system in place in order for it to affect the whole world. And this has been the real problem in trying to understand the prophecies in Revelation. Let's just come back here for a minute to Revelation 12. And let's look at one scripture that we've gone over many, many, many times. And as I have mentioned, and I think we will see it happening even more and more, that the book of Revelation becomes more understandable the further we go down the road toward the end. Because this being the last book of the Bible also tells us what's going to happen at the end. All right, Revelation 12, verse 9. This has not yet happened. And the great dragon was cast out, the ancient serpent, which is called the devil and Satan, who is deceiving the whole world. I want to focus in on the phrase, who is deceiving the whole world. Because this is a present tense participle in the Greek, meaning active, ongoing deceiving of the world. And I think that in this election, we saw more of that than at any time before in any election. Would you agree that's true? And such open lying and deception that they're not afraid to tell bald-faced lies when everybody knows the truth. Now, Satan has been busy using many different helpers. Government, education, religion, especially those three, and then as it filters down to everything, deceiving the whole world. Now, let me just give you another example here. Let's come back. You know this one too, well-founded, Ephesians 2. Ephesians 2. Let's pick it up there, verse 1 and 2. How Satan is doing it. And this will also help, and we'll take a little time on this. This will also help answer the question, why did God do what he did? And we'll go back and see what God commanded Saul and so forth. Verse 1, Ephesians 2. Now you were dead in trespasses and sins. So we have two categories before God. We have those who are called, who have received God's Holy Spirit, we have two categories of people in the world. Number one, those who have the Spirit of God and are called, we'll talk about this a little more this afternoon, to rule and reign with Christ and have been called by God for eternal life. The other category is the living dead. They're alive in the flesh, but they're all dead in their sins and trespasses, and they all carry the law of sin and death in them, and so therefore all have sinned and come short of the glory of God. Now, hold your place here, and let's come back to 1 Samuel, I think it is 15. 1 Samuel 15. Now, you will also recall that back in Exodus 14, God said that he would have war with Amalek in every generation because of what he did to the straggling children of Israel as they were coming out of Egypt, where they came and slaughtered the weak and so forth. And so even though they did what they did, and the children of Israel were able to beat them back, God said he would have war with Amalek in every generation. So here's one of the generations. And this is what the young people wanted to know. Why does God do it? All right, verse 1. Samuel said to Saul, "The Lord sent me to anoint you to be king over his people, over Israel. Now listen to the voice of the words of the Lord. Thus says the Lord of hosts, I will punish Amalek for that which he did to the children of Israel, how he set against him in the way when he came up from Egypt. Now go and strike Amalek. Completely destroy all that they have. Do not spare. Kill both man, woman, infant, and suckling, ox and sheep, camel and donkey." And so their question was, why did God order that? Especially infant and suckling. Well, you have to ask a couple of other questions too. If he killed all the men, how would the children be raised? If he killed all the men and women, then you have a greater problem. And then you have a population coming along which also will breed a lot of hatred and so forth toward the Israelites. Well, the answer is all of them, whether they are young or old, are part of the living dead, as well as the Israelites, because most of them weren't called either. And so God also punished his own people, did he not? Yes, he did. So the answer is this. There is a second resurrection, and those people will be resurrected to a second physical life, which then, as we know that's going to happen after the millennium, will this not be a better environment for them to grow up in? Having the blindness removed from their eyes so that they'd have an opportunity for salvation. Because even though God used the children of Israel to do these things, he did not offer salvation to the children of Israel. So when we come back here to Ephesians, the first chapter, we have the answer. They are all dead in their sins and trespasses. And really, when you understand it, the only difference between a full-grown human being and a newly conceived life in the womb is growth. So rather than let them live the way they were living, God took away all their lives and he will resurrect them. Now that's God's judgment. And it all goes back to Adam and Eve. Now let's read about the second category, which is us. Okay? because God has to intervene in our lives and call us. Okay, verse 2. In which you walked in times past according to the course of this world, according to the prince of the power of the air, the spirit that is now working within the children of disobedience, among whom also we all once had our conduct in the lust of our flesh, doing the things willed by the flesh and by the mind, and were by nature the children of wrath, even as others, even as the rest of the world. But God, who is rich in mercy because of his great love with which he loved us, we need to understand that. See, we'll cover this a little more this afternoon. When we were dead in our trespasses, has made us alive together with Christ. So we are the called, the ones who are the living, because we will qualify for the first resurrection. And the living dead are the ones who will die and wait the second resurrection, regardless of the circumstances on how they died, or regardless of the age in which they died. And as we will see, the reason is that God has something greater for those who are going to be in the first resurrection. Now let me show you how this deception continues. Because we have a convergence of things in America that have been borne out by this latest election, which is this. The ones who had, let's go back a little further. When the Protestants attempted to keep the commandments of God, howbeit ignoring and keeping Sunday instead of the Sabbath, there was a morality in the land, and people were taught there is a God, he does rule over everything, here are the commandments you are to keep. So there was a greater sense of morality, personal responsibility, and being able to have, how should we say, a good degree of understanding and common sense. Now, through the process of time, we find that through education, through deterioration of morals, deterioration of, we shall say, religious teaching from the Bible, deterioration in government, the onslaught of atheism, and agnosticism, now we come to a generation which is this generation. I don't know how many of you saw, did you see the news clips on the survey? They asked the ones who voted for the Democrats and Obama. They said, who controls Congress? Didn't know. They asked them several other questions and they didn't know. But they asked them, which candidate spent $150,000 on wardrobe? They answered that one. Okay. Also accompanying that is described by Joseph Farr, America's disturbing new moral code, which ties in with this great deception, ties in with the prince of the power of the air. Is morality just a matter of opinion? That's what everybody thinks today. Oh, that's what you believe. That's your opinion. Is there an actual absolute standard of right and wrong? Is a new moral code developing in America today based on contemporary cultural and cultural assumptions? Those are among the most important questions Americans can ask themselves. And the reason is, the older the population, the older part of the population, are generally the most moral in their values. But guess what's happening? the generation of the veterans of World War II, they're dying at 1,500 a day. And guess what is also happening? Graduated out of high schools and colleges are all of those who have been trained in socialism and no moral standards, and brought up believing that sex with anyone, anything, is perfectly acceptable. And furthermore, we have a right to be taken care of by the government. He goes on, much more important than, for instance, who should be the next president of the United States. A month ago, Barna Group released the findings of research that clearly shows Americans are redefining what is meant to do the right thing in their lives. And even Mike Huckabee has a book he just put out called what? Do the Right Thing. Okay. If you don't have an absolute standard of what is right and wrong, what is good and evil, how can you do the right thing? What ultimately happens? Everyone does what is right in his own eyes. Let's continue in the article here. The pollsters asked adults whether, in the previous week, they had viewed pornography, used profanity in public, gambled, gossiped, engaged in sexual intercourse with someone to whom they were not married, retaliated against someone, got drunk, or lied. The majority of respondents acknowledged engaging in at least one of these eight behaviors. Well, that was sort of being fudgingly honest, because they probably lied on a daily basis. Specifically, 28% admitted to using profanity in public, 20% admitted to gambling, including the purchase of lottery tickets, 19% admitted to intentional exposure to pornographic images, 12% admitted to getting drunk, 11% admitted that they lied, 9% said they had sexual intercourse with someone to whom they were not married, and 8% said they had retaliated against someone. While only 1% of married adults acknowledge having sex with someone other than their spouses, 21% of single adults said they had sex with someone in the previous week. In fact, reported the Barna Group, those younger than 25 were more than twice as likely to engage in these activities. Now, what you are going to see is an increasingly more Sodom and Gomorrah type society and morals. Their choices made even the baby boomers, never regarded as a paragon of traditional morality, a la Bill Clinton, look like moral pillars in comparison, the study concluded. Among the people younger than 25, 64% admitted using profanity in public, 30% engaged in sex outside of marriage, 37% lied, 26% gossip, 33% used pornography, 12% engaged in acts of retaliation. Now here's something interesting. Self-described liberals were five times more likely than those who described themselves as conservative to participate in immoral sex. And what are they taught in the schools? Well, here in California and other states, they have the homosexual program that starts in kindergarten, goes all the way through grade 12. And the way you destroy the mind of young people is get them engaged in sex and thinking on sex, and they will not study, they will not improve their lives, because their minds are consumed in flaming passion with how to engage in sex. And after all, it's approved by the school. George Barna, who directed the study and who has been surveying national trends in morality for more than 25 years, said the results were significant. We are witnessing the development and acceptance of a new moral code in America, and also a new government to go along with it. Now let's come back here to Revelation 11. Let's see something that's interesting, because this talks more than just about the city of Jerusalem, Revelation 11, but it talks about the whole moral set and religious set of the world, and also the governmental set. Revelation 11 and verse 8, it's talking of the two witnesses. And their dead bodies will lie in the street of the great city, which is spiritually called Sodom and Egypt. Now, here in California, they passed the constitutional amendment that marriage should only be defined between man and woman. But now there's a new term for the opposition. It's called the homosexual mafia. The lawless ones rioting in the streets and demanding that the Supreme Court of California rule on the constitutionality of the constitutional amendment that the people approved. They were the ones who voted that homosexual marriage should be allowed. See, rather than understanding what the Bible says, that God created man and woman for a great purpose, and that in bringing children into the world, they're also participating in God's creative plan. No, sex is something you do because it feels good. With anyone and anything that you want to, because that's the law of the land. So he says, the results were significant, because we are witnessing the development and acceptance of a new moral code in America. Those younger than 25 have had little exposure to traditional moral teachings and limited accountability for their behavior. Not true? Didn't we just this last week have an 8-year-old shoot his father and his uncle? The moral code began to disintegrate when the generation before them, the baby boomers, pushed the limits that had been challenged by their parents, the baby boomers. The result is that without much fanfare or visible leadership, the U.S. has created a moral system based on convenience, feeling, and selfishness. Another word is narcissism. You're only concerned with what you think, with what you want, with how you feel, and what you are going to do in life. You don't care about what your parents think. You don't care about what other people think. You're going to go do what you want to do, and the devil take the hindmost, and yes, the devil will take the hindmost. It may be an understatement, but this trend does not bode well for America's future. Once there was a widely accepted moral code in America, it was the Bible. I might mention the very first order for the Bible that we got out of the Washington Times was from Mechanicsville, Pennsylvania. You know, where those bitter people cling to their religion and their guns. Very interesting. It wasn't from San Francisco. That doesn't mean that people don't violate the code. They always did, but not with the ease and regularity we are witnessing today, especially with those who have little or no grounding in the scriptures. Mr. Barna has more sobering words about his findings, what they portend for the future. The consistent deterioration of the Bible as the source of moral truth has led to a nation where people have become independent judges of right and wrong, basing their choices on feelings and circumstances. It's not likely that America will return to a more traditional moral code until the nation experiences significant pain from moral choices. And we have crossed the threshold. The evidence of that moral deterioration has been the financial collapse of the economic system. What it's already done, it's cut down on gambling because there's not as much money. It has cut down on drinking. And it will cut down on illicit sex. But it isn't going to convert the people. That's only kind of a temporary drawback. Are you feeling the pain yet? It is time to take another look at what we believe and how we act. Are you ready to reconsider the value of the moral code handed down on Mount Sinai? Well, we have an answer. And I'll tell you about it after we take a break.